right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Well, I think we're live.
Five.
David Mitchell's with us. Okay. All right. So, you know, Mitchell, it's been an honor to have you as our producer, and we appreciate that. And we wanted to give you a chance to speak. David Kinney and I, Paul Taylor is inundated with some other election material. This is the busy season for the election of President Donald Trump. This is a time for conservatives to be rising up and standing for their traditional values, their ideas of law and order and tranquility. And this is wartime. So as a result, we're going to be gearing into war mode. We're not going to have a lot of time to be doing broadcasts continually. So I think we're going to be consolidating these broadcasts into a Wednesday and Friday program, because Monday we're just too tapped. And the president needs us for some of these operations and missions. We just saw Millie Weaver and the Shadowgate situation that's unfolding. This is not polite conversation, talk, and entertainment. These are war operations. These are information operations. So we're going into pretty intense firefights with regards to the deep state, these FBI, these Department of Justice, these police activities against Millie Weaver and others. And I think Shadowgate was really the wake-up call for all of us. So I wanted to kind of close with that today and, you know, give you, Mitch, a chance to give us your, you know, your peace of mind and your statement and how your congressional race is running and how people need to help and support you with that. And David Kinney, I wanted to hand over to give us his closing remarks on what's going on in America and where we're going from here. Go ahead, David Kinney.
Well, yeah, I think the one of the first things is I'd just like to thank Mitch for the time and allowing us to express our minds and speak from our hearts on his radio show. These are very troubling times for America. The left has gone off the deep end. It's, you know, I've called it a state of obliquity. They're oblique. They've lost the natural compass, and everything is just fighting and contesting everything. So these days ahead of us are going to be very challenging over the next couple of months. And you know, I have a colleague of mine at the Dunsmuir think tank, and we've been discussing some of the things that are taking place in the nation and refocusing and putting our efforts into some other programs. But I didn't know you were running for Congress, Mitch. So I just want to let you know how supportive I am. And for your newscast or for your people out there, you know, I would encourage them to assist your campaign, assist in your Revolution Radio. You know, I think that is going to be, you know, it's easy to ask people to do something for someone else. So I'm going to take a moment and do that, which is, you know, if every listener just put a dollar in an envelope and sent it to Revolution Radio, or $5 in an envelope and sent it to Revolution Radio, or $10 in an envelope and sent it to Revolution Radio, I think that would really help help the cause, so to speak. It would really help him providing time, and it would really assist in connection with his campaign or just keeping Revolution Radio on the air. You know, and it's important to have that other voice that cries out in a different way. We're not out in the streets conducting major revolution trying to destroy America. You know, we're just regular folks, you know, just like everybody listening, trying to do the best we can with what we've got and to be good Americans and to stay focused on, you know, raising our families, paying our taxes, taking care of our home, and taking, you know, being honest and law-abiding citizens with our next-door neighbors, and let everybody express their freedom of opinion and freedom of ideas without fear of retaliation or attack. So, you know, to a certain extent, it's very easy for me to reach out on your behalf, Mitch, and just ask people to support Revolution Radio. You know, and I would do that, and I'm doing it right now. So if any of you callers or any of you callers or any of you people out there would like to do it, I'm going to ask Mitch to give the address of where they could send some donations. But it's very important to keep these other programs alive, to keep the alternative voices speaking and crying out in the street. We're not engaged in Antifa-like or Black Lives Matter-like revolutionary programs. We're trying to be reasoned. We're trying to share our analysis, share our view of the news, and to be as supportive as possible to make change in America, but change for the better, not change for the worse. So, you know, so to any extent, for those of you who can contribute something, please do so. For those who can't, your prayers are certainly appreciated. And, you know, I think that's probably what I'd like to add.
Yeah, and I'll hand it, you know, to you, Mitch. I'd like to get your thoughts on where we're going, what's happening in America, where your candidacy and things are going, and go ahead and fill us in.
Hey, hello, Scott. Hi, David. Hey, how y'all doing? Boy, I tell you, it's slow to no going, in all honesty, because of myself. I was been sick 5 or 6 times since March, and even though we had gotten a reduction on the number of ballot signatures needed, I didn't get enough signatures, so I didn't get on the ballot, but I'm still running as a write-in. And, you know, the big thing to me in all of this is that government is so corrupt at the bureaucratic level that, you know, we can pass all the laws that Congress wants to pass. However, they're being passed by a wholly corrupted organization. And until we get control of government, until we send, you know, Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and Bill Priestep and Cortan and Lynch and Yates and Rosenstein and Orr and Laufman and, you know, Eric Holder and Dana Benente and Christopher Wray and Robert Mueller and his whole gaggle of bozos, along with Andrew Weissman and the rest of them, until we, you know, round those rascals up and send them to Gitmo where they really belong. You know, we don't have much chance in hell at a government for the people and by the people. So, you know, the bureaucracy itself, the government itself, is actually treating our elected candidates as if they're insurgents within their own government. You know, basically, they're using the same tactics the OSS used against the Vichy, the occupying Germans in France. So they've effectively cut off the American people from their government. And, you know, this attempt to keep control of this bureaucracy at the leadership is what drove them to rig the election, attempt to rig the election in 2016, and hence the Obamagate and the spying and the fraudulent prosecution of Flynn and others. It truly is a new world in, you know, as far as government bureaucracy and working in and around government is today. I don't think we can send people who are your typical bureaucrats that believe in this system the way it is today. You just cannot, because they're not prepared for the depth and the width of the corruption, the system that they're getting ready to get into. I just, you know, we have Bob Good running here on the Republican brand, and he really isn't. He's probably going to get elected because we're heavily gerrymandered Republican in this area. So it's a so I keep pushing the, you know, the Obamagate and this idea that, you know, we've lost our government already. The actions of the DOJ and the FBI and the Obama administration, the IRS, you know, they have proven that we have essentially lost control of our government, and the bureaucrats are essentially doing what they want, no matter what the elected officials say. So,
yeah, it's pretty unfortunate. I think the I thought that I don't know if you had an opportunity to see that Shadowgate. Did you get that with I forget Millie's last name.
Millie Weaver. No, I haven't seen it yet. I'm sure it's probably on BitChute, which won't take it down.
Yeah, it's an exciting expose. I think everybody in America should get an opportunity to see that. You know, hearing she got arrested on the day that was released was surprising to me, if not shocking. So, you know, these are acts by, you know, it was interesting. I was speaking earlier about the subject of our government and whether or not it's become our enemy. And, you know, when you think about it, here you are, just a regular, plain, nothing special American human being. You're trying to do the best you can to go to work, to provide for your family, to provide for your loved ones, to take care of everyone, to be kind to your neighbors, and, you know, to be passionate about the causes you believe in. And all of a sudden, here comes this plandemic along. And it's, you know, for those of us, for most of us, it's wiped out our businesses. It's impacted our incomes. Now the Democrats are coming forth with school bonds, which want to set our, you know, the tax rate for our homes higher and higher. And just the overwhelming impact of what government is doing to burden and oppress the common man is just getting out of hand. I mean, they've closed businesses. They've closed schools. They've closed churches. They've closed parks. They've closed restaurants. They've closed barbershops. They've closed fingernail salons. They've closed liquor stores. They've closed, you know, everything on earth except for the major corporations who continue to open. But, you know, the question, and it's a legitimate question to ask, have the people who initiated this lockdown, have they committed the biggest all-time crime in history against the American people? I believe they have. I believe they have. And how do you persuade others that such an egregious act has occurred? You know, you've got Anthony Fauci on TV saying, you know, wear masks, don't wear masks. You've got Biden saying wear masks. You've got Kamala Harris saying wear masks. They're going to kill people from wearing them. You know, they're going to deprive them of oxygen. They're going to be breathing their same old carbon dioxide, just getting worse and worse. So it's a legitimate question. Is government acting in the best interest of its people, or is the government intent on destroying its people? That's a valid question in today's America. Scott, what are your thoughts?
Well, we find ourselves entering a twilight zone, and a great separation is occurring between those who can think, those who value their rights, their privileges, their immunities, those who are unwilling to submit to the fascism, the totalitarianism, the authoritarian dogma of political correctness and mob rule and thug rule and fascist, violent Black Lives Matter. I like the substitute term burning, looting, and murdering.
Yeah.
Maiming, looting, butchering. This is the behavior of criminals and thugs and completely incompetent, just scum of the American nation. It's sad that they have been actually weaponized by teachers, and there's a slide that shows. Some of the people that have been arrested by the police that are associated with Antifa are school teachers. There's a whole proof of that, and it's amazing that this is occurring. But this is leading us to an America that I think is very, very much on the trajectory of a civil war. We already see the realignment away from mainstream media propaganda and to the alternative media. Revolution Radio is a key part of that. We're a key part of that. We're going to be shifting our focus and attention to Wednesday and Fridays and dedicating other time and energies to the political battles, presidential election, President Donald Trump. This is mandatory, and I would encourage everybody to do the same. To dedicate a large portion of their days and their weeks and the month and their hours to getting out and challenging people and making it very simple. We need people to recognize the severity and the danger in this coming election and to recognize that there's only two sides. You can't be independent. You can't be not voting. You have to recognize on one side you have Donald Trump for all of his failures and flaws and things that you may not like about him, whether it's his tone of voice or his orange hair or his orange face. I don't care and I don't know. But you have Donald Trump on one side, and then you have the schizophrenic, angry Kamala Harris and her dopey Alzheimer, dementia-riddled Joe Biden that are really puppets of a military industrialist fascist state. Those are your two choices. And the COVID-19 and the shutdown is the beginning of the end of America, or it's the trigger to a revolution and renaissance. And people should recognize their Second Amendment rights are going to be at risk. The country itself, the fabric of the country is at risk. But the new wine needs to be in a new wineskin as well. So the new wine has been the awakening that the election of Donald Trump has facilitated. And this is not particularly associated with his persona. The awakening that occurred in Americans that put Donald Trump into the presidency has permeated and dominoed and cascaded into greater confrontations with the deep state, confrontations with these political bureaucrat parasites who've hijacked the American government, James Comey, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, John Brennan, people in the military, Jim Jones, people on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, all have been furiously trying to foment propaganda about the Russian hoax, the Ukraine impeachment, the COVID-19 scenario. These are all weapons. These are information operations weapons. So people need to recognize they're in dire straits. This is an existential threat to the United States. They need to be aggressively standing against it and seeking alternative ways to send their children to school or homeschool them or create alternative recourse, and recognize that in places like California and New York, These are the first trigger points of a larger civil war in America. It may not happen the same in Kansas and Iowa and Oklahoma and God forbid, Texas. You won't have as much of a revolution in some of these states because they get along. But in states like Seattle and Oregon and California New York and Chicago, some of these other areas on the fringe, there will be a lot of violence and awakening and bloodshed. A great transmigration is occurring. People are leaving these areas for areas in the United States where there are guns and safety and protection and a renewed sense of tribalism. This is where the country is going. And I think Donald Trump needs to absolutely be recognized that he has to be reelected, and that any attempt to claim that he's not been elected, any attempt to claim that he is, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have won the hearts and minds of the American people, I think is pure propaganda, and no one should accept it. And they should recognize that we're in a war and Trump is a wartime president. And there are corrupt traitors in government that are seeking to undermine that and are trying to take over the country. So in a sense, it needs to be declared as martial law if it requires, because this is something that the country either fights off and burns out of its system like a fever burns out a flu. That means there's a required time of feverish, hot-blooded, very, very aggressive fighting back in order to purge the body of this infection. And if it's not done, the infection consumes the body, and everything that was once America will be dead. So I would say that. And again, people should donate to Revolution Radio to support the programs that we're continuing to broadcast. Again, it's not going to be on Mondays for us. There are other programs that are going to be on Mondays. But as for us, Scott Bennett and David Kinney and Michael Jay and some of the other guests that we're going to have, we're going to focus purely on Wednesday and Fridays. And people can go to the website shellgamewhistleblower.com for more information on that. And we're also reaching out to some of the minority populations in America. Meltingpotpatriots.com is another website we're just putting up, designed to recruit the new immigrants who have come to America legally that are in need of being recruited and trained and engaged to be conservative political voters and candidates. I would encourage people to go to meltingpotpatriots.com and see about that, because this is a time we need to reach out to these minorities, reach out to the Sikhs and the Hindus and the Vietnamese and the Chinese, and remind them that their heritage and their cultural conservatism mandates that they vote conservative Republican, not liberal Democrat, or else they'll be voting for their own destruction. Most of these non-English native speakers don't quite understand that, and they haven't been aggressively recruited by the Caucasian Republican Christian community in America, and that's been to our own detriment. So that's meltingpotpatriots.com. That is reaching out to recruit these new immigrants to be part of the American Renaissance, part of an American awakening. And we are planning an event on September 12th, 2020, down in Southern California. We'll have more on the website, but September 12th, 2020 in Southern California, we're going to be having a Defending the American Dream Leadership Summit, in which we are going to be talking more and more about the Trump presidency and new immigrant recruitment and a lot of the things that are we're currently wrestling with. So I'll end it there and hand it over to you, David Kinney.
Yeah, I think you're right about the direction of America. It's really been under substantial attack, which is now manifesting itself. I believe it's important that everyone gets a sense of community. What you're looking at is an all-out assault on capitalism. You're looking at an all-out assault on the American dream. You're looking at an all-out assault on what we know to be honesty, integrity, and truth. The problem that faces all of us as citizens of this great nation is the influence of the mainstream media, how it packages products. And that's what's going on right now. The media's trying to do everything possible to package Kamala Harris as being a suitable vice president and trying to package vice president.
I was laughing. They said moderate. Hey, that sounds like the break's coming in.
Sure.
There it is.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Revolution Radio. And we are continuing with David Kinney. And David, you had done a lot of work into something I think the American people need to really understand. And that is the school bond issue and the corruption of school bonds and how it relates to theft and fraud and stealing of money that is legislated for the improvement of schools and the education of America's children. And instead it is hijacked and it is stolen money and it is used for all sorts of nefarious criminal activities. I'm going to hand it over to you, David Kinney, and give us an education in this matter. Go ahead.
Sure. I think, you know, most people don't realize about the cost and expense of public education. So let me see if I can try and, you know, teach a class here. It's going to be rather time consuming and rather difficult to understand, but I'm going to try and make it as simple as possible. There are two aspects to running public education. The first aspect, the first pillar of public education, is curriculum and instruction, and that's given by personnel. That's where we have our administrators, our principals, our superintendents, our assistant principals, our counselors. Those are the people that supervise the aspects of running public education. In addition to those people are the teachers. These are called the certificated employees, the teachers and the counselors and the nurses. They all have certificates. The other employees who take care of the grounds, the janitors, the secretaries, the other members of staff, those are classified employees. And so when you're running a school district, you have three things on the curriculum and instruction side to take care of. You have the what's known generally as certificated personnel and classified personnel, because you have to pay the salary and the benefits of all those administrators, teachers, counselors, and nurses. And then you also have to pay the salary and benefits for the people like the classified employees, who are also entitled to their salary and their benefits and their days off and their sick leave and so on and so forth. So those funds are dedicated on the curriculum and instruction side. They're dedicated purely for the labor that's associated with education. So once you understand that you've got to take care of all these people, and we're going to take an example of a district. Let's just say it's got it has a budget of $100 million. Okay. Well, about 85% of that $100 million, so that would be about $85 million, is going to be used for purposes of paying for the human resources, for the salary, the benefits, the sick leave, the litigation. All of that goes for personnel. So again, it's on the curriculum and instruction side. Then you've got to take care of all the students and everybody attending the school, and you have the different expenses. On the other side of the coin, you've got facilities, and you have to maintain and you have to take care of those school facilities to make sure that they are operational, to make sure that they're functional, to make sure that they're properly wired, they have the technology that's required, and that also allows for them to be operational. So you have in education, you have two huge legs. The right leg is the personnel, and the left leg is the facilities. So think of a school as standing on those two legs, facilities and personnel. So you have a school district that has an annual budget of $100 million. And you spend about $85 million of that on the employees alone. So what happens is, now there's funding that comes from the state, and it's part of the general budget, and it helps schools pay for the costs of maintaining and constructing new facilities. But for the most part, when that state money runs out, school districts can go out and they can borrow money to build, just like you would want to borrow money to build a house. So the school district will say, well, you know, I think we need a new junior high school and a new two new elementary schools. So we think that's going to cost $25 million for the elementary school, or $25 million for one elementary school, $25 million for another elementary school, and $50 million for a junior high school. So there's $100 million we're going to try and raise. So what we want to do is we want to go out and we want to borrow $100 million to build those two elementary schools and the two high schools, or and the one intermediate school. So two elementary schools, $25 million each, one intermediate school, $50 million each. So you need your budget's $100 million. So you want, just like a guy who's building a house is going to say, okay, I need to, you know, it's going to cost me $300,000. So I need to get a construction loan of $250,000. I'll put $50,000 of my own dough into it. The difference is with education, you don't have to put a down payment. Okay. So you go out and you borrow this $100 million. And to get that $100 million, you issue school bonds. So we all see them. We see them every time we go to ballots. They're on the ballots every November of every major election year for the most part. And what those school bonds are saying is, hey, we have some new projects and we want to spend $100 million to build those projects. Now, the truth of the matter is, while the projects are estimated to cost $100 million, the costs that go along with that are the interest costs and the costs of issuing the bond. So when you have when the school district asks the voters of the school district to approve a school bond for $100 million, they're saying, yes, vote for it. We want to borrow $100 million. But in reality, when you go over and you read those tax rate statements, it says that the cost of all this taxation is not going to be $100 million. It's going to be $200 million. So what that does is it doubles the expense. So if you're going to build, if you think the costs of building the one elementary school for $25 million, the other elementary school for $25 million, and the intermediate school for $50 million, if you think that's the end of the expenses, you're wrong. It's $200 million when you have the cost of the interest and you add the costs of doing the funding along the way. And that funding is done in what is called tranches. And it's when you draw down the money. So when you're building these two elementary schools and this intermediate school, you can plan on blowing through a budget of $200 million in taxation. So when the school district comes to the public and says, we want you to vote on this bond and give us $100 million in authority, make no mistake, it's asking for almost twice the amount of the bond. Let me give you an example. The Citrus Community College District in Los Angeles, in LA County, just announced that they're going to put a $298 million bond on the ballot for November. $298 million, small community college district, wonderful place. I went there when I was a kid. So you've got the community college district wants to spend $300 million. So I went over and I read the tax rates. The first thing I did is I jumped right to the tax rate statement. And it's going to cost well over a half a billion dollars to borrow $298 million. And right there in writing in the tax rate statement, it's required to tell you what the reasonable estimate is. Now, interest rates are, you know, close to nothing right now, and it's still going to cost well over $200 million more in interest and fees. So there's a half a million dollars going into one project. Now, let's go back to the $100 million project. Let's go to the two, let's keep it simple. Let's stay with the two elementary schools and the intermediate school. $25 million, $25 million, $50 million, but we know it's going to cost another 25, another 25, another 50. So it's 200 million. So what happens is the general overall view for public bonding is we're asking for authority to borrow 100 million, but we're really going to spend 200 million. Once you understand that, you're halfway to understanding what it is about school bonds. So now you've got you go to the school bond and you ask for authority to do $100 million bond that's going to cost 200 grand. But who goes to the school board to do that? Well, you'd think most of the parents would go to the school board and say, hey, you know, the old Roosevelt Elementary School ain't what it used to be. The old Washington Elementary School ain't what it used to be. We need two new elementary schools, so $25 million each. And the parents, they want their children in nice elementary schools. Current, we want these best elementary schools in town. It's going to be $25 million each. We know it's going to be $50 million each. We want to build these elementary schools. Do you think it's the parents that are going in there and asking the school district to build those? Have you ever seen parents show up at a school board meeting and start pounding the table and asking for new schools? You know, I've been in education for close to 35 years. And I see people attend school board meetings and they talk about, you know, how the spelling bee, who won the spelling bee, where the kids are going on their field trips, who was the best teacher for the week. They're, you know, it's just the things that are taking place. Who won the football game? Who won the baseball game? How the debate team did? How the soccer team did? And those are the discussions. Very rarely do you hear people come in there and crying and sniveling about the facilities. They're just happy their kids are in school. They're happy they're getting an education. And they're happy they've got a nice, safe, and secure place to go. So, but who has an interest in building these schools? Who has an interest in, let's say, the $25 million elementary school, the other $25 million elementary school, and the $50 million intermediate school? And I'm going to be repeating this because I hate to be repetitious, but it's going to drive it home. Well, I'll tell you who has the interest in doing that. Those people are financial advisors. These are the guys that are involved in public finance because they know that if this bond for $100 million passes, they're not going to get a cut of the $100 million. They're going to get a cut of how much? $200 million, okay? Because the borrowing on the $200 million over 15, 20, 30 years, whatever the existence of the bond is going to require financial advice, when to pull down $25 million, how to use that $25 million, when to do it with favorable interest rates, when it's time to move on to the other school and pull down another $25 million, when it's time to move on to the intermediate school and pull down the first half with another $25 million and the second half with another $25 million. So the financial advisors, the Wall Street kind of guys, you know, the guys who charge, you know, $250, $300 an hour, drive, you know, the guys who pull up the new schools with the Mercedes-Benz and the Porsches and, you know, the capital guys. So they come in and they're all for the bond. And what they do is they go out and they get people who assess the facilities. So you get guys and they come in and these are generally architects or like architectural people. And they come into the school district and they assess the status of the school district. Now, it'd be like someone coming over to your house and saying, you know, oh, well, you know, your toilet doesn't work. Your stove's a little bit off. You know, your garage door is bent. You know, the sink down in the garage door doesn't work real well. But you know, if you want this house of yours first rate, even though you paid $250,000 for it, we think for another $150,000 or $250,000, we can spruce this baby up. So we're going to make it, you know, you need another $250,000. So what happens, same thing at the schoolhouse, at the schools. The people come into the schools, the architects and the engineers, and they come in because this is work for them. They get paid for doing this work. They do a facilities assessment, and they say, to have the perfect school district or to have the perfect elementary schools, going to cost $25 million, $50 million. Well, to have the other beautiful elementary school, it's going to cost another $25 million, $50 million. To have the intermediate school, it's going to cost $50 million. We know it's going to cost $100 million. But that's to have everything working and everything up to snuff. But have you ever noticed that all school districts, they complain about leaky roofs. They complain about bathrooms not functioning properly. They complain about, you know, the faucets not functioning properly. It's always the same complaints for school districts. Leaky roofs, bathrooms, plumbing, so on and so forth. But we need $25 million to give you a state-of-the-art elementary school. Okay, great. How do you do that? Well, you gotta get approval to sell a bond, and then you've got to sell it. So the first two people who are behind the bonds are the financial advisors, the Wall Street crew, and the second people behind the bonds are the architects, because they do the assessment, they tell you what you need, and then they tell you how, when you get the money, you're going to spend it and you're going to build up the school. So you've got two groups right at the beginning that are very interested in this, the financial advisors and the architects and engineers. Now you've got another group that's interested in it, because the financial advisors and the financial advisors and the architects and engineers, who are so familiar with this because it's their work to do this, they get paid, and they get paid well for building things. There's another group. There's a guy who becomes the project manager. And the project manager is a general contractor who has special contractors or subcontractors working for them. So we have four groups that are really interested in this $25 million high school, this other $25 million high school, and this other $50 million intermediate school. And these guys are very interested in these projects because it's work for them. It's work for the financial advisor, work for the architects and engineers, it's work for the general contractors, and it's work for the subcontractors. And they all support the bonds because they want the bonds to pass because it's more work for them. Now, there's one other group that's interested in having the work take place. And who do you think that is? It's the unions, okay? The unions, not the ones at the school district, not the classified, like you have, we have in California, the California School Employees Association. Well, it's not that union, because that union is excluded from doing any of this bond-related work. But you've got other unions that come in, and they could be with construction trades, or they could be with plumbers and fitters and iron workers, and they're going to come in and they're going to support the bond because it's work for them. It's capital. They're assisting in the construction of capital improvements for school districts. So these groups are it's been my experience that those groups of people are more interested in improving our school districts than are the parents of the school district. The most proactive group interested in developing the schools, the financial advisors, the architects and engineers, the general contractors, and the subcontractors, along with the unions. Those are the people that are interested in improving the schools, because that's where they get their bread and butter from. So they have a self-interest in it. Now, what they do is they approach board members, the school board representatives. So if you have a 5-man board or a 7-man board, it takes a majority. It takes 3 out of 5 or it takes 4 out of 7. But in some cases, you have to get 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 7 to pass certain kinds of bonds. But the majority, so these financial advisors, contractors, architects and engineers and unions go to the board members and they say, we'll support you if you promise to build a bond or if you promise to build some schools and if you support our bonds. So now what happens is you have to have a campaign for the bond. It becomes a political campaign, just like you see the political campaigns for Donald Trump, just like you see the political campaigns for Biden and Harris. So you have Trump and Pence, big political campaigns. You have Biden and Harris, competing political campaign. But you also have political campaigns for bonds. So what happens is generally, before the bonds get on the ballot, the school district has to vote on those bonds. And they say, well, you know, we're taking a look at this and we think our school district can handle $100 million worth of taxation. And so we're going to vote for $100 million worth of property taxes to support our schools. But what do we know? We all know now that it's not just $100 million. It's the Wall Street costs, the cost of issuance and everything, and the interest. So now it's $200 million. So when the school board members say, we want to pass a $100 million bond, what they're really not telling you is that it's $200 million. And that's going to be in taxation on your property. So every year when you have to, or twice a year when you have to write your property taxes, you're going to look down at that bill and it's going to say X amount, which is school district tax for Measure A, Measure B, Measure C. And all of a sudden you're going like, wow, you know, I used to pay $86. Now I'm paying $350 or $700 a year just for the school district bond. So the people who are paying for that new element, those new elementary schools and that new intermediate school, the community pays for it, not the financial advisors, not the architects and engineers, not the general contractor, not the subcontractors, not the unions, but the people that live in the community have to pay for these bonds. So what happens is this idea to pass a $100 million bond, in a nutshell, is going to cost $200 million. Now they've got $200 million. They're now going to impose a tax on your community to generate, to pay debt of $200 million over, let's say, 10, 15, or 20 years. So this is the first part of what we want to talk about. So a quick review. Cost of building the elementary school, $25 million. True cost, $50 million. Cost of building the other elementary school, $25 million. True cost, $50 million. Cost of building the intermediate school, $50 million. Really, $100 million. So the first thing to learn from this is that whatever the amount of a school bond is, when you look at it, you can double it. We'll be taking a break right now. We'll be back shortly. I think we're going to take it right now.
Yeah, here we go.
We have a minute to the break.
Oh, we have. Okay, so
yeah, it's 47. Yeah,
or 57. All right, so let's just take a real quick review. The people who are interested in the bond are the financial advisors, the architects and engineers, the general contractors, the subcontractors, and then the union representatives. Now, in addition to that, there's also the material suppliers who supply the materials and the workmanship So you've got the new roofs and you've got new bricks and you've got everything else. So all these people have an interest and they hope to God that you fall for the $100 million bond that's going to cost $200 million. It's like buying a Mercedes. It'd be like buying a Mercedes Benz that they tell you is going to cost you $50,000, but in the end, it's going to cost you $100,000. It's the same thing. It's the same game, and it's taking place all over the state of California, but the amount of the school bonds is skyrocketing.
See it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat asses, eating and drinking themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio. Where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
Hello, Karl Marx here. Look at my wonderful hair. Notice how I sweep it back.
Karl!
I call it the 360 sweep. Beard, sideburns, and the magnificent coif.
Karl!
What? What is this?
You're on the radio. They can't see you.
Oh, yeah, I get confused.
Want to learn more about the Marxist agenda and other important stuff? Listen to The Ultimate Remedy with L.B. Bork, Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in Defense Condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
Show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, David Kitty, we're continuing on with your analysis of the school bonds issue and what President Trump is as the commander-in-chief, what resources he has to dedicate to solving the issue, the lawsuits that can be brought, the fraud, all of these things within the legal sphere, I know we want to get into, but I'm going to hand it to you to let you continue on your presentation. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Now, I realize a lot of you are out there probably working at school districts and are, you know, you hear a lot about bonds and everything else, but I'm just trying to give you some of the realities, some of the behind the scenes realities about things. Now, I'm going to take it again. All right. So we have those who are interested in the bonds, the financial advisors, the architects and engineers, the general contractors, the subcontractors, and the unions. They're looking forward to being able to blow through $200 million. And let me assure you of something. I don't think they really care that much about the product that they're delivering. That's in my experience. Okay, so now there's got to be the bond, the ballot question, the bond has to get on the agenda. So in order to get that bond on the agenda, the financial advisor and the lawyers for the school district say, okay, requires this paperwork, put the bond on. They put it on the agenda. The board passes it. And now comes the political campaign. Well, the Board of Education is not allowed to spend any of its own money, any public monies, on promoting the campaign. They can spend public money on providing a true and accurate rendition of the bond, the effect of the bond, what it would do, but they can't engage in the sale of it. So what happens is school districts generally engage what's called a public relations person. And so this public relations person does this, quote, public relations study and says, well, you've got 52,000 in this city, you've got 40,000 people in this city, you've got 50,000 people in this city, and you've got a few more, so we've got 150,000 voters, so we've got to reach 150,000, we don't have to reach 150,000 people, but we've got to reach 75,000 people, because half of those people vote, and half of those people don't vote. So the politicians go out and they get the political data and they determine how many are Republican, how many are Democrat, how many are Green Party, how many are Peace and Freedom Party. And they look at it and then they put together this informational mailer, and they probably will have two or three mailings. So you'll see ahead of time that these mailings come to you and tell you what a great deal this $100 million bond is going to be, that costs you another $100 million in taxation. So remember, bonds are twice the face value, almost twice the face value. So you look at $100 million, it's going to be two. So now it's got to get on the ballot. Okay, but who's going to pay for this thing to get on the ballot? Well, let me tell you, there's a firm that's it's an architectural firm, and this architectural firm has a real interest. They think they've got a fat chance at being the selected architect to do the architecture of these buildings. So maybe this architect has a couple of dinners with the board members and says, you know, I'll donate $10,000 to the bond campaign. Nope. Make it $20,000. Well, nope, make it $30,000. So he's now got commitments of $10,000 each to get this bond on the ballot. Let's say it's a five-man board. He's gonna spend $10,000 on putting the first mailer together, $10,000 on putting the second mailer together, $10,000 putting the third mailer together, and he can't talk about any of the candidates or anything. That's against the law. But he's got to sell the bond measure to the community. So the architect says, I'm going to put in $30,000. And the project manager says, holy smokes, you're going to put in $30,000. I want an opportunity to bid on this contract for for $200 million. Remember, it's twice the cost. Says, okay, well, I want an opportunity to bid on $200 million. $100 million worth of work that costs $200 million. So you have two people, actually three, that contribute. You have the financial advisors, architects and engineers, the general contractor. They're the ones who pay for these campaigns. By and large, if you go pull all of the financial statements for school districts across the state of California, a prime example is Riverside. Another prime example is Alum Rock Union Elementary School District. Another prime example is Bassett Unified School District. Another example is El Rancho Unified School District. Another example is it's the one right on the border between in San Diego. I forget the name of it right now. But it's the architects, the financial advisors, the architects and engineers, and the contractors, for the most part, pay for the bonds. They pay for the bond campaign. Let's say the campaign's going to cost $50,000. Well, they're happy to pay. They're happy to invest. Let's make it simple. The architects say, yeah, I'll help with a bond. I'm in for $25,000. I'll support the bond. The project manager says, well, I'm going to go just as good as the architect. I'll pay $25,000 toward the bond. There's $50,000. Now you got enough money to run the bond campaign. They want a real good chance of getting the award that comes from the board. Now, everybody going to tell you that, you know, you can't buy influence like that. But you just take a look at the people who pay for the bond campaigns and see how those people end up getting the work after the bond is passed. So these people pay 20 architects and engineers, $25,000, the contractors, general contractors, $25,000, financial advisor, maybe a couple grand here and there. And, you know, sometimes money from the unions, they'll pay, you know, $2,000 or $5,000, depending on the size of the district. Boy, I'd really like to know about LA Unified School District, because they're currently running a $7 billion bond. And my understanding today is that this bond was not even properly noticed or put placed on the agenda. But in any event, so this is, and we're just talking about a measly old $100 million bond over here compared to LA Unified running a $7 billion bond. By the way, let me ask you what that $7 billion bond is going to cost. I'm sorry, I heard that. Oh, $14 million. That's correct. $14 billion. That's correct. So a $7 billion bond is going to cost $14 billion in taxation. But let's go back to our small little local neighborhood school district building two elementary schools, one intermediate school, $100 million. We all know it's $200 million. So now the bond is successful, meaning it has to have a supermajority qualifying it, which is 55% or more of the voters have to vote in favor of the indebtedness. But if they do that, it's called a Prop 39 bond. Otherwise, it's a Prop 49. Otherwise, it's a two-thirds majority vote. But if you run one at 55% voter approval, if you run a 59% or 55% voter-approved bond, then you have to have strict accountability and oversight measures. And you can only spend the bond money on construction, reconstruction, remodeling, furniture and equipment on capital improvements. So the bond passes. The school board miraculously votes 3-2 to pass the bond. Bond passes. Now the school district has $100 million of bond authority, which is they can now create $200 million in debt. And they're going to draw down they're going to award the contracts. Well, they've already got the lawyers on board. Now they've got to award the financial advisors on board too. Oh, public relations people are already on board. And now the architects and the general contractors have to compete for the work. So they're supposed to put in requests for proposals and or bids for the work to be done on the projects. So let's go to the first elementary school. So all of a sudden, they're going to bid on a $25 million project, and they're going to say they've got, let's say, a budget of $20 million with 10% override. So it's $22 million, and they've got $3 million in reserve for screw-ups. So here comes the bond. Here comes the first project, Elementary School 1. Roosevelt Elementary School is going to cross we're going to have a budget of $23 million. We're going to have an override protection of about $3 million. And hopefully we're not going to spend all $25 million. Second one, now Washington Elementary. Well, same thing, same school. Let's be fair with our community. The bond for the rich kids in the rich side of town is 20 for an elementary school. We're going to spend $25 million. So let's spend the same thing on the other side of the tracks. Let's spend $25 million on the other side of the tracks. So let's do $25 million for Washington, and let's do $25 million for Roosevelt, the two elementary schools, and that sounds good enough. Okay, so these contracts are all issued, the bids are issued, all the work starts. And now there's all of this money flowing through the school districts, but it's not over to the left side. It's not on that first pillar. And what is the first pillar? The first pillar is curriculum and instruction, and it's employees. It's the administrators. It's the teachers. It's the counselors. It's the nurses. It's the staff members for the school district. Now, they can't get any of this bond money, because this bond money is all restricted to capitalization for all capitalization expenses, for spending it to build things. Remember, it's like building your house. If you've got a $250,000 construction loan, you spend the $250,000 for a construction loan, you spend the $250,000, you should have a home for $250,000 at the end of it. It's been capitalized. Okay. So now the two elementary school districts committed at $25 million each. Now the elementary school, same thing. Let's do a budget of $40 million. We're going to have 4%, we're going to have 10% or $4 million in the hole. So that's $44 million, $6 million for ancillary expenses. We're going to shoot through the $25 million at each elementary, and we're going to shoot through the $40 million at the intermediate school, because they're public funds. Why should we build for cheap? Why should we build for $100,000 that which we can charge $200,000? Have you ever wondered why at most parks you see these ungodly amounts of money being spent on restroom facilities at local parks? I saw one where they built a restroom facility at a cost of $1 million. Brick building, men's restroom on one side, woman's restroom on the other side, $1 million project. Are you kidding me? $1 million for two bathrooms? Well, it's public funds. You know, you got to have equal access. You've got to have all the handicap stuff, which is fine. I'm supportive of that, 100% supportive of equal access for the handicapped, for the disabled. But how do you eat up $1 million in building bathrooms. It's beyond me. It's just beyond me. And yet they pass public budgets all the time. These are going to be at cities or counties when they run parks. We're not even getting into water bonds yet. That's another story to go. I'm just trying to stick on the school bonds. So now the construction takes place, and the general contractor is taking about, you know, anywhere from, you know, 6 to 8% of the contract value. So if he's doing a $20 million school, and he's taking 6%, be about $12 million. Is that right? No, well, I'm sorry, $1.2 million. So supervising it's maybe $1.2 million. And the other school, supervising the other school, other $20 million school, is now going to be another $1.2 million. So $2.5 million to supervise the construction of the school. And the hiring of architects, the hiring, you know, bringing the labor, bringing the materials in, scheduling the projects, this part of the school first, that part of the school second, you know, these things all have to be done in order. And if you ever notice, when school bonds pass in California, and a lot of them are being passed every other 2 years, it's phenomenal the amount of public debt that has been placed on the taxpayers of the state of California over the past 8 years alone, or 12 years by now, since 2008. It's just incredible sums of money have been placed on school districts, placed on the taxpayers in school districts. The amount of debt is extraordinary. It's never ending. Now the projects at $25 million per elementary school, $50 million for the intermediate school, are moving forward. And the people are coming in and they're working, and the laborers are working. No school district employees, hands off. You get some administrative supervision. You get some people from maintenance and facilities, from the contracting side, from the facility side of the district, who will oversee and provide advice. And they've got some work that they have to do to make sure that the work progresses properly. But these three schools projected to cost $100 million. We all know they cost $200 million. But all this money is now floating through this nice little local school district out in the San Fernando Valley, the San Gabriel Valley, you know, just anywhere. And all of the school districts in California are just voting in favor of the bonds because they're voting in favor of education. They think they're voting in favor of education. Is it on the curriculum and instruction side? Question. Does bond money go to curriculum and instruction? The answer is yes. The answer is no. The answer is yes, because it can enhance it by maybe improved computer technology or maybe improved facilities. But it really doesn't go to the workers on the left side of the spectrum, being the administrators, employees, certificated and classified. Those funds don't go to the workers. The funds for bond money are supposed to go into the capitalization of the projects, but it goes into the enrichment of the financial advisors, the enrichment of the architects and engineers, the enrichment of the contractors, subcontractors, and the poor workers like you and me and the rest of the boys that have to pay, that have to get the wages and get our taxes, and we pay those bills. So what happens now is that these projects saddle the communities with unbelievable amounts of debt. But you know, one of the first things you see when a school district passes a bond, I mean, it's done. They've got this game down so well This is the art of stealing public. They should call this the art of stealing public funds, because the first thing that gets attention is the football field. And you know what they do? They recover the football field and they put the brand new logo right in the middle. So because people go to football games, parents don't go to schools except for, you know, the parents of kids who are disciplined. And then the parents go to the football games and they see out there in the middle, they say brand new turf. At least looks like new turf, but it's probably fake grass, but new turf, save money on water nowadays. And there's this bright, shiny new logo. And yeah, we just passed a bond for $200 million. And look what we've got. We've got a new grass field that's not grass, and we've got a brand new logo. So by gosh, they're doing great work. Then they start building the schools. They start building the facilities. So you get new athletic field. You get maybe a new soccer field. They, you know, throw the attention at the restrooms and some of the improved solar lighting that takes place, all at this unbelievable cost. And now they're supposed to have oversight. They're supposed to have an oversight board that keeps an eye on the construction or keeps an eye on the expenditures. But the people who appoint the oversight board are the members of the Board of Education. So the Board of Education says, we're going to spend $100 million. We're going to have an authority to spend $100 million in bonds, which is we're going to have authority to spend $200 million. And we have to appoint oversight. We have to appoint members from the public to serve on our oversight board. And their duty is to alert the public if there's abuse, fraud, or waste. So the school board appoints the people from the community, and you have to have someone who knows a little about architecture, someone who knows a little about business, someone who knows a little bit about everything, and then three other members of the community, and they have the duty to exercise oversight. And every year, if you have a Prop 39 bond, there are two reports that are required. One is a performance audit, and the other one is a financial audit. The performance audit says, well, we were supposed to spend $7 million this year, and we're going to make sure that the performance measures the equivalent of $7 million worth of work. And then we have the financial audit that says, well, how did they spend the $7 million? So now the school board goes out and hires its accountants who come in and say, well, we looked at the first year and our performance audit shows that there was $7 million worth of work done. And our financial audit says that, you know, we've gone through and we've checked the receipts that there's been $7 million worth of work done. And so they do that for 3 years on this schedule. And they're eating up $21 million. But you've got a performance audit that says it was all spent. And you got a financial audit that says, yes, it was all spent on capitalization, on projects for capitalization. But how often do these oversight boards meet? I think they're required to meet once a year, or maybe it's twice a year. I mean, how can anyone attend one board meeting a year and keep an eye on the expenditures of $20, $25 million over 3 years? One board meeting a year. You have to stay on your game. You've got to look at what the financial advisor has said. You've got to look at what the architect and engineers have done. You've got to look at how the general contractor has scheduled the work. You've got to look at how the subcontractors who've done the work, and you got to make sure the union people are happy, because all of those people are the ones interested in the bond. And the reason they're interested in the bond is because they're providing the work and they're earning the dough to have these schools, these new elementary schools placed in our most lovely and our beloved unified school district. Okay, we'll move on to the last part of the analysis in the next 30 minutes concerning these scams and schemes.
Yeah, look forward to hearing from it, Dave. I want to hear more about what the president needs to do about this and who needs to be investigated. Stay with us.
Sure.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice.
anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, David Kinney, we were excited to hear your very thoughtful legal economic breakdown of what may be one of the greatest crimes and scams upon the American people and certainly the people of California since our inception. And perhaps we can lead into what can the president, what must the people, what must law enforcement, what must the courts do to curtail, analyze a wound with the searing white-hot metal of justice? Go ahead, David Kinney.
Well, you know, first off, Mitch, thank you so much for the time. I know this is protracted, but no one ever explained bonds to me. And when I finally got some of them, this information, I was like astounded. But let me go through some of the local bonds so we get a good idea. And then we'll come to some concluding factors, and I'll make a number of recommendations. First, just back in March of this year, now I guarantee you there are a lot more on there are more bonds on the November agenda. The November ballot. I haven't even looked. But let's take, for example, in March of this year, Sacramento City Unified School District, $750 million. That's $1.5 billion. Proposition 8, San Francisco Community College District City College Bond Issue, $825 million. That's $1.6 billion. Let's go to West Contra Costa Unified School District, $575 million. That's close to $1 billion. Chula Vista Elementary School District, $300 million, well over a half a billion. San Ysidro School District, that's one of the names, $52.985 million. That's basically $100 million. The school district that I was going to mention is Sweetwater Unified School District. Sweetwater Unified has blown through so much bond money, and they've got nothing to show for it except controversy, administrators going to jail, board members going to, I don't know if administrators, but board members going to jail. It's just unbelievable abuse. McFarland Unified School District, $30 million. That's almost 50 to 60 million. Fresno Unified School District, $325 million. That's over a half a billion. Let me give you a few others. Ukiah Unified, $75 million. That's $150 million. Let me get some big ones here. San Mateo Union High School District, $385 million. That's well over a half a billion, and just a bunch of other school districts. Locals, this is what I like, local public school funding authority bond issue for Los Angeles, $125 million. That's over $200 million. San Leandro, $198 million, close to $400 million. Foothill, De Anza Community College District bond issue in Santa Clara County, $898 million. That's going to be well over $1.5 billion in taxation. Dublin Unified, $290 million. That's going to be close to a half a billion in taxation. Berkeley Unified, $380 million. It's going to be well over half a billion dollars in tax. Mountain View Wisman School District, $259 million, close to a half a billion. It's just uncanny. The total amount for, let me see if I can give you the total amount for March of 2020. Oh, I don't have it. But let me give you the total amount for 2018. There were 127 school bond elections that authorized $14.3 billion. $14.3 billion. But it's not $14.3 billion. Double that. And you get 28 million. It's going to be billion. It's going to be well over $25 billion in taxes right there for 2018. 120 school districts, 84% passage rate, $14.3 billion. That's not counting the state bonds. These are local school bonds created $14.3 billion in tax authorization, which means well over $25 billion in taxes in 1 year. I haven't had a chance to add up March of 2020, but I can only imagine what it is come November of 2020. But most importantly, gosh, I don't know how to say this, but I encourage everyone, every parent, every teenager, go and look at your school district and see if they're spending bond money and if they're putting in new facilities. Because this, in my opinion, is the biggest tax fraud in the history of mankind under the rubric of providing an education. It's shocking. I'll tell you exactly what my recommendation is. My recommendation to President Trump and Attorney General William Barr is to form a special school bond election task force, and to form it immediately and to dispatch them to the state of California to identify the financial advisors, the architects and engineers, the general contractors, and the subcontractors and the unions who are involved in some of these extravagant, unbelievably expensive, these oppressive and burdensome taxes, when none of the school districts are being substantially improved. You see a couple new buildings here and there. You'll see a new football field here and there. But when I drive around the state of California, and I've driven all around this, I went up to check out a bond in bond expenditures in the Klamath Trinity Joint Unified School District. There were millions of dollars being spent up there. And I went to look at each of the school districts, and there was one school, Wichipec. It was Wichipec Elementary School. It was no bigger than I'm going to be generous, a 3,500 square foot house, no bigger than a 3,500 square foot house with a great big playground and a couple of water heaters and things like that. But it's not the expense of building a house. It's as big as a house. And it was around $1.6 million. I was floored. So what I'm trying to tell the people of the United States of America is under the rubric of education, the architects, the engineers, the general contractors are turning this money back over into the hands of the politicians, supporting their careers as they just burn through the dough in their political candidacies and run for public office. Now, one moment. When Javier Becerra was running for attorney general in the state of California, he made a side remark, and I'll never forget this. I listened to his whole speech, and then Javier Becerra said, "We're behind Hillary Clinton. We're behind her 100%. You know why? She builds schools." And he said it just like that, opening the floodgates to these funds that are I believe, diverted for political purposes, not for educational purposes. So a tax force, a presidential task force charged with doing the review of the state of California, because whatever they learn from California will hold true in Illinois, in New Jersey, in New York, in Massachusetts, in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, and you'll see how much money is being poured into schools, but they're putting out our kids who are as confused as the day is long. I think that's probably the end of my presentation.
Well, it's certainly comprehensive, David. The thoughts that come into my mind on a governmental level can be, all right, how do you get the most severe, overwhelming indictment and criminal charges, and what are the criminal charges for such action? Racketeering, fraud, conspiracy to commit, maybe wire fraud, environmental violations, any communication or transmittal of communication or information, any banking forms, any environmental certifications or forms that are filled out for the environment of schools. Remember, schools, in a sense, in today's modern society, the Environmental Protection Agency is everywhere involved. And if you submit one piece of paper to a federal government agency certifying that this school that's going to get the bond, that's going to have $1 million bathroom built or something, is certifying some environmental respect or some environmental code or something like that, and the whole thing is fraudulent, then it would seem that you're setting them up for a massive, overwhelming investigation from a variety of agencies. So what are these agencies? Well, the Department of Education, of course, should be the front runner.
Yeah, should be.
Education and their own inspector general, their own personal investigation unit should be working in tandem with the Department of Justice inspector general. So the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, and the Department of Justice and other agencies, the Environmental Protection Agency or IRS or others, they all need to be shining their spotlights on these schools and the bonds.
On California, you have to realize that the cancer started here in California. It's going to spread to the rest of the nation. Okay, it's going to spread like wildfire to the rest of the nation. They have to get to California, attack California with a special task force, and really go through some of these districts. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. California needs to be the beach of the Normandy landing, if you will. But what is the status of any of these investigations? What is the status of any of this material? What's happened so far that we can point to with regards to, you know, courts or investigations or the Department of Justice or even the president or congressional committees as well? Because there is a congressional committee that deals with education. And so the Congress and congressmen from a federal level, the chairman of the education committee is, you know, California, I would write off every single politician as worthless. But
yeah,
you may have some teeth when you have some, you know, members of Congress or the Senate that are in some sort of education community from Ohio or Oklahoma or Kansas or something that says, you know, what we need to investigate California or have them brought out because what they're doing is a national security threat. It's massive fraud. Like you said, it's threatening the rest of the nation.
Yeah, and the important thing to understand, the important thing to understand is that this is for – you cannot be a lawyer within your first 10 to 15 years of practice and even expect to be in this area. I practiced law for over 20 years, and when I first bumped into this problem. You know, I knew a little bit, but I didn't know anything compared to what it took me 3 years of an ongoing investigation on a daily basis of 8 to 10 hours a day. I wasn't getting paid for the work. I did it all out of my – I had a recovery in a case that allowed me to just focus for 2 or 3 years on learning this stuff, and I was just shocked. But you can't – I mean, if you're a lawyer, if you're – there are no – there are plenty of lawyers who know all about school districts, but they represent the school districts. There are not many lawyers. There's a guy by the name of Richard Michael who writes, who has a website called Big Bad Bonds. And Richard Michael knows more about California school bonding than anybody on the planet. Okay. He'd be the, if I were, I would have him come testify to the United States Congress. I would recommend that to the Senate. I would recommend that the Senate summon Richard Michael to Washington, D.C. to put on his presentation about the bonds, school bonds in California. I would beg for that. You know, God in heaven, hear my voice. Richard Michael testifying before the United States Senate about bond fraud in the state of California. That's my first recommendation. But like I said, you cannot, you have to, look, as a lawyer, you have to understand about 5 different areas of law. First, you have to understand the inner workings of the school district. Then you've got to understand the rules, the election rules. Then you've got to understand the education code and how that relates to school bonds. Then you've got to understand the financing code. Then you've got to understand the constitution that allows you to run these bonds. Then you've got to understand how they work with the financial advisors, how they work with the general contractors, how the architects and engineers. You have to be in practice for a long time to figure this out. And then to lead up a charge against the state of California, you have to have someone with an incredible amount of experience and to know what they're looking for. Now, it got to the point where I could look at the agendas and minutes of a school district. You know, what took me 30 years to learn, what took me 30 years of experience to learn, and then 3 years of applied science to figure out, was the school bond fraud deal. It is the biggest farce taking place at the expense of the American public. It's just unbelievable. It's uncanny. It's so shocking.
So let me ask you a question, David. If you were the attorney general or the assistant or advising the attorney general, who would you, or even the Justice Department committee, the Justice Committee, who would you subpoena to come before you and testify, knowing whatever questions you'd ask them? But who are the people? What are the names, if you can give them to us, that members of Congress or the committee or the White House could call, could subpoena, and demand that they come before the people of the United States and the government and sure. Testify and be asked questions and be prepared to give answers to those questions? Who would you name?
So I would name the first off, Richard Michael. Wonderful guy, just has done an outstanding job in terms of his review. Richard Michael for sure. Then I would get someone from a couple of firms. There's TBWB Strategies. I would summon that firm to appear before Congress and to explain itself. There are about 4 or 5 law firms that specialize in this area. I would summon those firms to Congress and have them explain the nature of their undertakings. There are about 3 or 4 financial advisor firms. I would have them come and explain what goes on in the state of California. And there are about 5 to 10 financial firms that do the underwriters who hold the bonds, and the financial advisors who helps the underwriters who hold the bonds and sell the bonds. Those same ones come back to Congress, and I will put together a short list of those, and I'm happy to provide them.
Yeah, I think it's a necessary agenda for the president to pursue for the Congress and their committees that review the education, the bond, the tax, all of these issues. These are horrendous crimes that I would suppose can be prosecuted and the charges levied against these individuals. And also if it is a means for funding and financing domestic terrorism, if this is a means for that sort of thing.
Let me tell you what I think. I think that the school bond cartel presents just as big of a threat, if not more of a threat, to the education of American children than in the state of California than anywhere else in the nation. This cartel of school bond, I'm going to say fraudsters, because they know damn right well what's happening, and they know damn right well where the money's going. But I'm telling you that this cartel of financial advisors, of architects and engineers, of general contractors, they know they're, you can hold them both in two hands. There aren't that many. And there's just rampant, unrestricted abuse, fraud, and waste taking place. And the worst part of it is this, that a $100 million bond on its face is $200 million in debt. Do you understand that? A $500 million bond on its face is $1 billion in public debt. That's what's just so disturbing to me. And I don't see the education of children plummeting, just plummeting. I don't see outstanding success of our children. I see this confusion, this disorientation, and this oblique depression and suicide, facing their future. You know, this country's gone to hell. The state of California's gone to hell in a handbag. It's just frightening.
Yeah, it is. But that's, again, one of the reasons that we're stepping up for the next 3 months at least to try and initiate the political change in the country. We are looking to back a conservative renaissance and repel and push back this Antifa Black Lives Matter wave of violence and thuggery and stupidity. And granted, it's happening in the capitals of violence, thuggery, and stupidity, Seattle, Chaz, Chop Zone, whatever you want to call it, Minneapolis, Chicago, New York, these places. If there's any place that needs Charles Bronson and Death Wish, it certainly is there. And I think that vigilante, martial law, patriotic militia, citizenry, that armed citizenry that stood up to challenge the British are coming, are rising up now, are organizing now, are preparing themselves now for the inevitability of what may be coming. We're not facing an organized army. We're facing a horde of savage zombies. And that's really what they are, savage zombies that are out of their minds. They have no conscience. They are cannibalistic, self-destructive, but yet they are like locusts looking to invade and destroy the crops of civilization that this country has grown for the past 200 years. And the only way to meet that is with violence, with the Second Amendment exercise to defend oneself, not going into the streets and initiating fights or picking fights or going on the attack, but always leading a defensive attack and preparing yourself for meeting this challenge. So I think people are now's the time to call them forth and prepare and organize and prepare their neighborhoods and pray for the president, of course, and pray for Revolution Radio. So it's been an honor. I'm glad that we've had this time, and I'm going to hand it to you, David Kinney, for our final closing words. Go ahead.
Well, I just like to, I've been waving this flag and trying to get everyone's attention. You know, I've almost thought of self-immolation once or twice on the Capitol, on the steps of the Capitol of California, just to bring attention to the issue. But guys, President Trump, get someone out here fast.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.